The sinologist and scholar of religion Philip Clard has dealt in a paper delivered some years ago with the concept of popular religion in religious studies produced in Europe and America. In this paper, Clard writes, "My discussion will focus on Western language scholarship because the conceptual language used in Chinese and Japanese language research, even while interacting with Western terminologies, really represents a separate semantic field with its own characteristics," unquote. A worthwhile undertaking then would seem to me to be an investigation specifically into Chinese language discourse on belief and most particularly on popular belief in the context of the People's Republic of China. Already extant are a large number of analyses by European and American scholars purporting to deal with the theme of religion and popular religion in China. My own reservations, however, about the applicability of the term religion to the Chinese context, we also had some discussions at the EKGF on this term question already, along with the fact that many Chinese scholars display a clear preference for the term Minjian Xinyang, popular belief, over the term Minjian Zongjiao. This is one of my preliminary findings, by the way, have prompted me to choose for the present study the title Popular Belief in Contemporary China. As a framework for my analysis, I have chosen the specific procedure of discourse analysis. I follow Foucault here in understanding discourse as a mass of enunciations which belong to a system of formation that the historically changing rules of which govern that which is sayable in the present day. Foucault describes his motivation for adopting this approach in the following terms. I quote, "I found formulations of levels that were much too different and functions that were much too heterogeneous to be linked together and arranged in a single figure. One is confronted with concepts that differ in structure and in the rules governing their use, which exclude one another. What one finds are rather various strategic possibilities that permit the establishment of the same theme in different groups of statement, hence the idea of describing these dispersions themselves," unquote. It is my concern to trace out a portrait of the discourse actually engaged in by Chinese participants in contemporary discussions, but not in order to pass judgment on this discourse as right or wrong. If it cannot, of course, be denied that my personal perspective, my choice of topic, my presentation and organization of the material all imply certain presuppositions, nor that all these aspects of the present study are necessarily marked by my own scholarly background. The material basis of the present study is formed by book publications, contributions to magazines and journals and internet sources from a period starting from around 2000 onwards. The historian Shao Jung and the historian of religion Daniel Overmeyer have pointed out that at the beginning of the 21st century, research on popular religion in the People's Republic of China entered a new phase with many significant works of research in this field appearing in the last 15 years. A new, the discursive period of my investigation then is formed by roughly the years 2000 to 2015. Let us look at the research into religion in China today at the discursive field. The position of religious studies in the academic landscape, as well as in the society, culture, and politics of contemporary China, is, according to Zhuo Xinping, director of the Institute for the Study of World Religions at the Academy of Social Sciences in Beijing, still an uncertain one. It must constantly be further sounded out, in his words. Nowadays, claims Zhuo, the work of scholars in this field will always inevitably be made the object of criticism. The scholars in question will either be reproached with having substituted their own proclamations for the words of the Chinese Communist Party, or suspicions will be expressed that these scholars are speaking about religion at the behest of adherence to a specific religion. and have thereby forfeited any claim to an independence of viewpoint. Lo Yulie, who is a professor at the Philosophical Institute of Beijing University, delivered in 2013 a series of lectures on the topic of the academic study of religion. Here, Lo claims that the true nature of the Marxist perspective on religion, which is until today the dominant one in China, remained for many years in China incorrectly understood. I quote, "We clung to a single formulation and made essays from it. In our earlier research, we attempted to determine at what point religion would simply vanish. We thought that it would vanish as soon as both the key reasons for its emergence had ceased to apply. Human beings would come to recognize, after all, the true rules and laws governing the development of nature, and the oppression of class by class had indeed already been abolished. Human beings then, so we thought, were now free and enjoyed equal rights with one another and were able to be their own masters. Class exploitation was a thing of the past, and nobody was any longer using religion to numb and stultify the mass of the people. For a long time, the Marxist theory of religion was propagated in these terms," unquote. Now, let us have a look at a recent enunciation by one of the highest-ranking politicians dealing with the topics of religion and belief in the PRC. Wang Zuo'an, born 1958, has been director of the State Administration for Religious Affairs, Guojia Zongjiao Shiwuju, since 2009. He has this to say in 2013 on the subject of religion and belief. "The number of religious believers is constantly growing, and in the realm of religion, some complicated situations have evolved. The influence of religion on society has deepened, and we have to react to this in a correct way. People in China have begun to reflect on questions of belief. This will have a deep impact on China's future development, and we have to pay more attention to these questions. The reasons for the growing numbers of religious believers are complex. In my view, the most important reason for this development is the deep societal change in China. Society is becoming more and more divided into different strata. People have divergent interests and diversified value orientations. This leads to more space for the development of religion. In day-to-day reality, people are confronted with fierce competition and uncertainties. So the feelings of insecurity are growing. Seen from today's perspective, the religious question doesn't seem as simple as we had originally thought. In the past, we were of the opinion that after entering a socialist society and improving the material living standard of the people, religious consciousness would fade away very fast. But now we are faced with the opposite phenomenon, a religious revival. In the Marxist understanding, religions do have positive as well as negative aspects. Religion can contribute to social stability, but can also be used to obstruct social stability. So in dealing with religions, we have to support the positive factors of religion and to control the negative ones. For a ruling party which follows Marxism, we need to help people establish a correct worldview and to scientifically deal with birth, aging, sickness, and death, as well as fortune and misfortune, via popularizing scientific knowledge. Our country is a secular state, not a religious one. We cannot allow religious regulations to overrule state regulations," unquote. Lin Guoping, born in 1956, philosopher and historian who teaches at the Faculty of Social History at Fujian Normal University, points out in a text from 2008 how there has historically been a lack of acknowledgement and recognition of popular forms of belief in China. I quote, "Popular belief, Minjian Xinyang, has for a very long time been refused recognition by successive Chinese governments. It has often been repressed, opposed, and even forbidden by official government authorities. Even today, popular belief has still not been taken up into the protected sphere established by Chinese government legislation on religious matters." Many government officials still look upon popular belief as a terrible danger. They confound such popular belief with feudalistic superstition, fengji and mixin, and would, if they had their way, sweep all such popular belief from the state of history overnight, unquote. I would like to mention here in passing an interesting legal case from the year 2005 that was brought to my attention by our young colleague and research assistant, Sung Xiao Kun. A client of a master of mantic arts in Shenyang brought a case against the master to court because he felt cheated by the expert, whose prognostications did not turn out to be correct in the client's view. There was a lot of money involved in this case, but in the end, the client's claim for compensation were rejected by the court ruling, saying that these claims were unsubstantial, as both parties were willfully involved in a practice of feudalistic superstition. Let us now look at the question of the definition of belief and religion, because it forms an important discursive thread within the discursive field bearing on belief and religion in the PRC. As I mentioned before, orders of enunciation in China are still dominated by Marxist concepts. Definitions of belief and religion have a direct effect on social practice in China. It will become clear, however, as we examine the following discursive thread, that there also exist different discursive positions. Quite a few Chinese authors hold to the view that the Marxist perspective on religion, which has hitherto been the hegemonic perspective in China, continues to be the most significant perspective on these matters for China. Other authors, however, question the interpretative power of this Marxist perspective and attempt, beginning from discursive positions of other kinds, to propose their own interpretative models and theses. One clear representative in China of Marxist theories on religion was Ren Jiyu. He lived from 1916 to 2009. He was active as a philosopher and historian and a member of the Chinese Communist Party. In an article which appeared for the first time in July 2004 in the Renminbi, the People's Daily, Ren gives the following definition of religion. Now, this is a quite recent enunciation. I quote, "Some years ago, I argued that in order for the people to escape poverty, they must first escape the influence of the factors that have made them stupid, and that indeed the latter must occur before the former can. When I say stupidity, I mean by this term not only a low level of culture or an insufficiency of knowledge, but rather also the following. When someone, as a consequence of confused thinking or lack of knowledge, entrusts himself in matters of personal happiness or unhappiness, welfare and misfortune, right up to the success or unsuccess of important personal enterprises, to supposed gods and deities who do not in fact exist at all. Therefore, it remains an important and urgent duty for us to propagate a large-scale, deep-going scientific atheism, and to educate our fellow human beings in such a way that we together can stamp out superstition and leave this condition of collective stupidity far behind us," unquote. In contrast to this enunciation, Ren's successor, Zhuo Xinping, whom I have mentioned already, proceeds from the assumption that members of the Chinese Communist Party are also adherents of a belief. In a work published in 2013, Zhou presents a thorough analysis of various types of belief. He distinguishes here between political, national, cultural, religious, philosophical, and scientific belief. He raises the demand that Chinese society's perspective on this issue of belief should be thoroughly rethought. Since 1949, he says, religion in China has been strongly politicized and marginalized. Religions are still apt in China to have hats put on them. This was a practice endemic during the Cultural Revolution when you would like to criticize someone. And religion tends to be politically dismissed and finished off by means of summary criticisms, so that academics working in the field of research into religion tend to be haunted by an insidious anxiety, and such research is plainly failing, even in an epoch like the present one, which is clearly potentially decisive for it to move forward at all. This means that the hope that research into religion might develop in China into a social scientific discipline whose legitimacy would be acknowledged nationwide is now receding into the realm of only distant possibility. In 2010, Li Xiangping, professor of sociology of religion at the East China Normal University, declared that belief is a difficult thing to define, but went on to say that it is nevertheless in belief that there reveals itself the basic attitude of Chinese people toward the world. There exists, he said, close to Xi Jinping's view in that regard, political belief, traditional belief, religious belief, personal belief, popular belief, belief in a political party, state belief, and social belief. Already in 2011, Li had predicted, I quote, that the question of popular belief will make possible a unique perspective on the traditional society of China, especially under conditions of the continuing further development of Chinese society and the Chinese economy, and in the face of the continually renewed renaissance of traditional cultural belief, popular belief and research into it will surely form in the years to come an important focal point of activity in the Chinese academic world. Unquote. Popular belief, says Li, is a social belief, shihui xinyang, widely disseminated among the people. Especially the rural population tends to practice popular belief at the level of entire villages and social groups. Rural society, indeed, takes form above all through associations based on belief. Prayers to deities for protection, for weather favorable to agriculture or for the driving out of diseases, etc., are things connected with well or ill-being of all inhabitants of a certain region. Here everyone has a part and everyone bears responsibility, says Li. In 2010, he published a work in which he warned of the dangers of the politicization of belief and of a connection of belief with political power. He writes, "Once again, New Year has come around. The Education Ministry early on issued a proclamation that schools of all the various grades and levels throughout the country should organize their pupils to take part on the internet on this occasion of the New Year in activities offering homage to the motherland. The specific content of this homage," Li goes on to explain, "was required to consist in the following. A genuflection vis-à-vis the magnificent rivers and mountains of the homeland. Another genuflection vis-à-vis mythical forebears like Huang Di. A third genuflection for the heroes and martyrs. A fourth for the vanguard of the revolution. A fifth for the heroes and exemplary human beings. And a sixth for the masses. For thousands of years," Li points out, "the homages rendered by the common people of China at the time of the New Year festival had been homages of their own choice, rendered voluntarily and had had nothing to do with the public ruling power. This year, however, homage to the motherland at New Year became a political obligation. This year, the government actually exhorted the people to pay homage to the state." In the 1960s and 1970s, the cult of personality had predominated, says Li. In accordance with this cult, homages at New Year had been made taboo. Now, however, the state itself has taken on the role of an object of belief which must be revered. But how is it possible to pay homage at New Year to an abstract state? A genuflection vis-à-vis the magnificent rivers and mountains, but the whole sky over China is obscured by polluting dust. A genuflection vis-à-vis great forebears like Huang Di, but the historical myth now lie in the far distant past. A third genuflection for heroes and martyrs, but the admission tickets for places of cultural interest are now very expensive. A fourth for the vanguard of the revolution, but historical memorials are now commercialized. A fifth for the heroes and exemplary human beings, but exemplary human beings tend nowadays to consist mostly of the political and plutocratic elites. And a sixth for the masses, but peasants and workers are facing nowadays a sharp division of rich and poor. If, however, the object of homage at New Year is stipulated solely by government officials and not chosen and acknowledged by the people of the state themselves, then we have to do rather with the making of such homage a means to the end of bringing belief in the state to expression. People in China, Li argues, do not have the chance to give free expression to their chosen belief. Li concludes his argument with the following formulation: we have all been compelled to believe. Woman do pei xinyang la. By receiving such homages, the state becomes itself a sacred entity, argues Li. But belief cannot simply be created in this way. Belief is not the basis of a state and also not a basis on which to govern a state. Belief is, in Li's words, the basis of civil society, gungmin shuhui. One ought not to make of it, by means of symbols, a method of control. In recent years, power and wealth in China have been endowed more and more with a sacred character. Possibly, there might emerge a certain cooperation between public authority and traditional belief. In the Chinese discursive context, the question as to the functions of belief and religions plays an important role. More and more results of field research are also currently being presented. The ethnologist Liu Zhijun, born in 1972 of the Institute for Sociology of the University of Zhejiang, describes in a work published in 2007 the concrete coexistence between adherence to popular belief and Christians in a rural region of China. Liu visited and interviewed a female medium of popular belief in the village of Zhangdian, a village 13 kilometers away from Hangzhou. He reports, I quote, "When the medium falls into a trance, she utters disconnected sentences such as, 'In the spirit world,' says Chairman Mao, 'the one-child policy applies just as it does in the human world.' The medium recounts that many people in Zhangdian have in recent years fallen ill with cancer. They have been struck by this catastrophe," she says, "because they failed to honor the local deity, Ho Tu Nai Nai." About Christianity, the medium has this to say: "Jesus is a foreign deity. He cannot settle the local affairs of Zhangdian." The medium is angered and offended by people who convert to Christianity. They would, she says, come to a bad end. In the view of the medium, the deity Ho Tu Nai Nai has already punished people with death because they maintained contact with Christians. People, she says, who pray to the Christian God are paying respect to the forebears of foreigners. Chinese who do such a thing are clearly acting wrongly. The author's conclusion is the following: in the rural networks of cultural authority, there exist latent conflicts between Christianity and popular belief. The sociologist Hua Zhiya has pointed out in an investigation of the situation in Hebei, published in 2013, that one reason, among others, for the conflicts between adherence to popular belief and Christians is the following: Christianity, as an officially recognized religion, enjoys in principle the protection of the religious authorities, while popular belief in China still exists in a gray zone, and its adherents lack any such protection. The current goal of many communities of popular belief is their legalization. Now let us have a look at discursive strategies for the legitimation of popular belief. One frequently advanced argument for the legitimation of belief and religion in the discourse of Chinese scholars is the situating of belief and religion within the framework of culture. Chuo Xinping argues, for example, that in many parts of the world, religion is already situated within the cultural strategies of specific countries. This, he says, would also be a possibility for China. For Lin Guoping, popular forms of belief are especially valuable because they have preserved in a highly intact form certain contents of traditional Chinese culture. Several authors describe popular belief as the soul of popular or folk culture. Yang Nianqun understands popular belief to be a part of the cultural system of rural Chinese society, over which it is easier to exert control than it is over the power system. In this discursive thread, there appears to be a striving toward a depoliticization of the topic of belief and politics. Min Li from Sichuan sees religion as a symbol for the existence of the nationalities. Her book appeared under the auspices of the National Advancement Project 985, which made funds for scholarly and scientific development available to central Chinese universities. Here we see, on the discursive level of scholarship, a struggle not just for symbolic, but also for actual material capital. Several authors see the taking up of parts of Chinese popular belief into the intangible cultural heritage as a way toward a fuller legitimation of popular belief in the future. The Matsu traditions, for example, have been recognized by UNESCO since 2009 as part of said intangible cultural heritage. But this question is also a very complex one. I think it cannot be explained in one or two sentences, and it is not sure whether other forms of popular belief would also be included in this intangible cultural heritage. Further strategies for the legitimation of popular belief include the emphasizing of this latter's economic function. Popular belief, it is argued, creates a market of consumers and promotes production. These lines of argument converge with one of the main goals currently being pursued by the Chinese government, the country's economic modernization. Lei Chunfang Tu of the Research Center of the State Administration of Religious Affairs sees popular belief as playing a larger and larger role in local economic development, for example, in tourism. Here, however, some scholars also express criticism in the way that the party state authorities deal with popular religion. Wang Mingming sees a certain arbitrariness here. If local cadres consider popular religion to be useful, for example, in drawing transnational capital flows into China, then religion is in this case being instrumentalized. In other cases, however, popular religion is criticized, marginalized, and excluded. Lin Guoping reports cases in which popular belief temples have been declared illegal and torn down. For example, in Zhejiang, these things happened during the last year. Now, concluding remarks. What then are the preliminary results of such an analysis of a Chinese language discursive field bearing on belief, religion, and in particular popular belief during the years 2000 to 2015? The annunciations composing this discursive field show, on the one hand, a significant intertwining of the discursive levels politics and scholarship, or science in China. Zhuo Xinping and others clearly address the existing power relations within the discourse. He said he once said, the political circles have the final word. Unquote. It is the duty of researchers into religion, however, Zhuo goes on, to press on even there where expeditions can become dangerous. The hegemonic discourse, which is prescribed by national and party state agents and institutions, holds firmly to certain premises, such as the Marxist view of religion, which is compulsory for Communist Party members, and the definition of the People's Republic of China as a secular state, with the right to regulate and govern phenomena of religion and belief by administrative means. Popular belief has not yet been officially recognized on the national level. The activities of popular belief are in contrast to those of the five recognized religions of China not protected under the constitution. On the other hand, however, there are also to be noted certain tendencies to searching and exploration also on the discursive level of the agents and institutions belonging to the party state. The Chinese language discourse of scholars regarding policy problems and perceived shortcomings in political implementation guidelines for religious matters is distinguished by an openness that I would not have expected in such a degree. This is another one of my findings. Lin Guoping points out that popular belief in China has historically often been suppressed. Chen Jingguo is critical of the fact that in the discourse of Chinese modernity for around 100 years, now there has persisted a designation of popular belief as feudalistic superstition. The scholars whom I have cited here explicitly wish for a change in discourse. They draw upon certain central concepts within the hegemonic discourse, such as rational and scientific, that bear a positive connotation, and attempt to use these in the course of the recognition of popular belief and also partially in order substantially to change the dominant order of enunciations. Li Xiangping, for example, argues that the concept of feudalistic superstition is un-Chinese and that it represents an import from Japan. The question of the definition of belief and religion forms an important discursive thread within the discursive field which I have examined here. Orders of enunciations in the People's Republic of China continue to be dominated by Marxist concepts, but interestingly, there also exist significant differences even between those discursive positions which can be commonly assigned to the category of Marxist perspectives on religion. In his definition of belief, Li Xiangping even makes the following argument: China will not be able to make progress until a re-establishment of belief has been completed. Such an argument is tantamount in the end to constituting the entire Chinese people as a community of believers. This appears to me to be a strategy to remove belief, especially the word belief, from the marginal positions it presently occupies. My discourse analysis represents a snapshot in time. It was important to me to provide insights into the lines of argument and the discursive threads of Chinese scholars and social scientists. I would like to end with an image. Zhuo Xinping once characterized the situation regarding research into religion in China in the following terms: the water is still deep and murky. Shui Shen Bei Qing. So there is still a lot to explore. Thank you very much.